What's happening, everybody? Welcome to a Wednesday edition of Texans All Access. Yes, I am back. Feel good. John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter. I say I'm back. I've been here, but the voice of the Texans, Mark Vandermeer, was there, and there was the owner's meetings. What's the official title of the owner's meetings, Mark? It's like the spring meetings.
It's
not the owner's meetings, but that's what we know it as.
It's singular. It's the NFL annual meeting.
That's it.
Not meetings.
Yeah.
But everybody calls it different things. They call it the owners' meetings. But there are many owners' meetings. We've talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one in May. They do it in October, maybe
right.
In December, too. They have many owners' meetings throughout the year. But this is the meeting. They call it that because it includes GMs, coaches,
right.
Owners, and league executives as well. So you get a lot of that kind of stuff.
You get a lot of stuff at all of these meetings. But I guess this is the most important one because they keep it singular. Okay, a little later in the show, we're going to have In the Lab with myself and Drew Doherty. We talked about big. Would the Texans draft big? We'll talk about that a little bit later
okay. In
the lab. But Mark, the last couple of nights, you have been loaded with guests.
Loaded.
And in 48 hours... there's so much that happened at the NFL annual meeting that we need to talk about. So I'm going to start in order of things that I think, to me, are fun and just fun.
Okay.
I said it. I called for it the night that Andre Johnson was named to the Hall of Fame.
Mm.
It was announced he was going into the Hall of Fame. There were three Bears up on stage. Well, Steve McMichael wasn't there, but he's represented by his wife. Count him. So Steve McMichael, Devin Hester, Julius Peppers going in for the Bears. Andre Johnson, the first Texan to go in. Let's do it. Bears Texans Hall of Fame game. And the NFL did it.
Yeah.
August 1st, Thursday night. Now, I know we haven't thought through all the logistics in this thing yet. But playing a game up there means I'm going to Canton for the first time. Never been there.
Ooh, nice.
Which sounds, I know, weird for people. Like, wait a second. Never. I've always wanted to go. I want to go. Now we get to go.
It's not that it's that hard to get to. It's not as hard to get to as, say, Cooperstown.
That's hard to get to.
All right. Springfield's even easier to get to for the Basketball Hall of Fame.
I've been to both Cooperstown and Springfield.
Oh, good. I didn't know you were in Springfield.
Been to both. Now, it was a long time ago. It's been over 30 years since I went to the Hall of Fame in Springfield, but still pretty cool to get through there.
I went a couple of years ago to the Basketball Hall of Fame. I've been to the Pro Football Hall of Fame only once when the Texans played in the Hall of Fame game in 2002.
Right.
It's not that it's that hard to get to, but it's not exactly around the corner.
Right.
And you have to fly into Cleveland. That's the nearest major city airport. And you drive down. It's a trip. You got to make that a destination.
It is a destination for us because on August 1st, now, if you're wondering, they've changed things a little bit with the game a few years ago. They put the game on Thursday night and then moved the ceremony and everything
smart
to Saturday.
Smart.
So I'll be interested to see how that goes. I don't know what that's going to mean for us.
What do you mean?
Are we all sticking around for everything?
I don't know. I don't know exactly how it's all going to go down, Johnny. There's a lot of planning, and you and I have shows to do. We have practice to cover because, you know, the team's going to hightail it out of there right after the game. I doubt D'Amico stays for the ceremony because he's got a team to coach.
Absolutely.
You're in the middle of training camp, getting ready for a campaign. So I would imagine the team flies back that night. They'll be back at practice Saturday morning, probably.
Right?
We got to cover practice, do we? Yes, most likely.
Yeah.
We do shows. We'll definitely have a show Friday morning of some sort. Well, actually, you know what? We'll probably burn up all our training camp shows before the game, the morning programs.
That's what I think.
We'll still have night radio. There's a lot to consider. Now, we're talking about us, fans. You go down for the Thursday games. Friday, they have that dinner, but you're not allowed in the dinner, most people.
Correct.
I think that dinner is pretty exclusive.
Yeah.
I don't know how much media, if any, they let in there. We'll talk to McLean about this tomorrow.
Yeah.
Then, and nobody better to talk about the Hall of Fame weekend with than John McLean. And then you have the ceremony on Saturday, and then Sunday you're out.
I
think they moved the game for a variety of reasons. The best reason is people were leaving before the game. A lot of people were. Now you get people in there for a long weekend, and it's awesome, and you can stay as far away as Akron or Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm just looking forward to being there. This is going to sound strange, but yeah, we do have a team to cover. So if we go there now I'm going to imagine we're going to go there Wednesday, get an opportunity to see the Hall of Fame on Thursday, potentially, and then go to the game, have the game, and get back. that'll be enough for me to just experience at least that part of the weekend to get back. I would love to see Dre, you know, in Shrine, be there at the ceremony, but that ceremony gets long. I very rarely have watched it on television because it gets long, but it's going to be great because there are going to be a ton of Texans fans there to be able to see Andre go in, but just to be there, we'll be able to see Andre. I would imagine he'll be there for the game. I would imagine we'll have him for interviews at some point during the game. That's going to be an incredible whirlwind of a weekend for him, but looking forward to that. So that news came out. Then, obviously, there was the – you had the opportunity to talk with Cal and Hannah both nights, actually. But no. You had a chance to talk to them about – I don't want to call it a change, the transition. I don't know the best way of saying it. But just all the news that happened with Callahan. I know you've talked about it a little bit, but I still want to get your thoughts about it, just you and I being together for the first time having a chance to talk about it.
When Bob McNair passed, Janice McNair was the principal owner, and she's got a lot of help with Cal McNair being the chairman and CEO, right? Mm-hmm. But there was still a transition to make because she was still technically the owner, as right. we know it, and I'm not using all the terminology here, but she decided to let Cal become the principal owner. She handed off to him, hands the baton to Cal, but she's still around, obviously, sure. and Cal's been really running the team as the chairman and CEO with her input, and now it's Cal's to run, and still with her input, but he's got it now.
Yeah.
It's been a road where you had Bob McNair, one of the most respected owners in the league, founder of the franchise, a guy who would not be denied to get this franchise established on the map, the battle with LA. I mean, everything that Mr. McNair did, and they really quickly put him on the finance committee because they realized how smart he was. Yep. And Cal McNair takes over as the chairman and CEO. Now he's the principal owner. So I think, you know, he becomes even more of that group, if right. you will. But he's right. been going to all the meetings with Bob McNair forever. Mm-hmm. We talked about this last night with him, and now he's still in the meetings, clearly. And I think the franchise is obviously in very good hands with Cal and Hannah and Janice, who just passed off the team principal ownership. And look at what they've done. They brought D'Amico Ryans in, Nick Caserio.
Yep.
Team is humming along now, and we'll see where it takes us.
Yeah, the value of the organization, too. I think this happened probably about a month ago. I had it up on my screen, and I thought we would get to it. Then when you and I got talking about football and probably the Golden Girls on TV, and I didn't get to it. The Texans are one of the top 12 from a value standpoint in professional sports in the world.
Yeah.
Top 12 value.
Well, which they've always been high up there on this
always,
list.
But to be in the company, like just yeah. to look across and go, dang. Wow.
It speaks to all aspects of the organization
yeah,
over the years that they've mm-hmm. been able to do this. And when you think about, I always point this out, Johnny, they're the only team, I haven't seen the latest list. They usually come out with it around May, June,
right.
sometime spring, summer transition. But they're the only team in that list that has not won a championship yet. And
correct.
That's too bad, but they're the youngest team on that list
right.
as well. So they're the youngest team on that list. The stadium's not new anymore. You're dealing with a stadium over two decades old.
That's
I mean,
crazy.
Some cities
to think about, yeah.
abandoned their stadiums
yes.
after two decades.
Absolutely.
Georgia Dome. Hey,
yeah.
I know they want to get rid of FedEx Field. They have for a while.
Mm-hmm.
There are other examples. But with the Texans, with the fan base and driving things forward, now the football side of it has really come around again in a big, big way. We hope bigger than ever. The value is there, no question.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Okay. You mentioned the, I don't know if it's one word or two. I guess it's two. But you mentioned a city name.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we are not going west. It's the Los Angeles Rams that are coming east for joint practices. Now, there's not a whole lot we can really
do about that.
Talk about it. I mean, look, it's going to be pretty cool to have them here. I wish Aaron Donald were here. That'd be great work for our interior guys.
Yeah.
And I always love getting a chance to see Donald up close. With him retiring, I kind of thought back to my Senior Bowl experience with him. I told the stories before about sitting there and watching him at practice just ruin guys at the Senior Bowl, just ruin them. And I'm like, what? And I remember thinking either those guys aren't very good or he's the best there's ever been. And kind of both statements could be true. And I think they turned out that way. But the Rams will be coming here for joint practices. I know we always love joint practices, but it's Matt Stafford and the Rams.
Yeah.
It's Puka Nacua.
Yeah.
It's Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
It's just kind of cool the Rams coming here.
It will be cool with the Rams coming here, and they have not announced a preseason game with the Rams. It makes me wonder.
Right.
But I don't know if they even know
right.
what the preseason schedule is. It's not like they know and they're not telling us, Johnny. I don't think they know.
Right.
I think they might be hoping, but maybe they do know. I don't know. But it would be great to have the Rams come in here for your – one of two home preseason games. You only have eight home games this year, like the old days, nine road games, and you have two preseason home games. So maybe the Rams are one of them. Boy, if we were going out to LA, I can tell you this. We're responsible for the production of the preseason TV broadcast, and that gets rather pricey out there and cumbersome.
Oh, you don't have to tell me twice.
And they're not even nice about it out there. I don't want to take you inside baseball on this. SoFi Stadium is a real tough place to broadcast. They built a remarkable facility, but it could be a lot better in the broadcast world of things. But anyway, yeah, that would be cool.
Practices out in L.A. would have meant multiple days.
That would have been great.
In L.A.
That would have been great. I wonder.
Awesome.
Here's what I wonder. So you have now four preseason games.
Yep.
And you're going to have joint practices that we know about against the Rams. Is there another joint practice on our horizon on the road? That's what I wonder. You're only going to, again, have one. But did I just say one road preseason game, two home games?
Yeah.
Well,
you said that.
Yeah, but I'm not including the Hall of Fame game, which is a road game. It's a
neutral site.
Neutral site.
One neutral site, two home, one road.
Yeah.
Hitting it all.
So with that game, you know, I doubt you see C.J. Stroud in that game.
I doubt you
see too many of your starters in that game. That is going to be backup city. That could be third string city.
Absolutely.
You know?
That's just to kind of whet the appetite. And it's also the very first game in which there will be some new rules. Now, you notice that our pal Andre Ware is not on with us tonight, because this would devolve into, what is the NFL doing? Dre, not real happy about these rules.
Dre is get off my lawn guy when it comes to some of these rule changes.
Absolutely. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it will happen maybe in the intro of the first preseason game against the Bears about the kickoff rules. Okay. There will be some grumbling about it. There's no doubt. That said, these new kickoff rules, if you haven't seen the news, or
they've seen it,
you've seen it. If you're listening to us, you probably have seen it. But either way, they've essentially taken on the XFL rules with some tweaks.
I don't know if that helps people. I mean, I know what you're stating. It's fact.
So basically what's happened is they've taken the collision. You think of a kickoff. It's full on long speed collisions. 25, 30 yards downfield. So what they've done is they've moved the covering team up about 40 yards-ish.
So the receiving team.
So the receiving team is then about 5 yards. The blockers are about 5 yards from them.
Yes.
So you've minimized these 20 to 25-yard, you know, long car crashes.
They can't move until the ball is caught or touches the ground or touches somebody.
Because they're only 5 yards apart. So what this in turn does is it opens up for more returns, because you now have essentially an offensive play you can run. I'm really curious how the NFL teams are going to put this together and look at the rules and how they're going to interpret the rules, because there's going to be some coaches that interpret the rules and go, whoa, they're not saying we can't do this.
Yeah.
They're not saying we can't do this.
You can lateral.
You could. There are a lot of things you can do. And so I was on, I was talking to somebody about this, and they asked me my thought. And I said, you know, I think what this is going to do is just all different levels. First of all, it's going to open up the number of returns. Teams are going to be forced to return. You're going to have, I think, some bigger plays that are created. Maybe not long touchdowns all the time, but you're going to have some bigger plays, because with the teams being so close to apart, there aren't kind of waves. It's just one wave. And if you beat that one wave, away you go.
You're gone.
Then you get to the personnel part of this. And this is where I think it's real interesting, because somebody said, well, what do you think? I said, well, I think what this might end up meaning, A, you might keep more running backs than maybe you keep another running back as opposed to wide receiver, because that running back is used to running an offensive play. You know, from the backfield, he's got vision on things. That's why Damian Pierce. Right. That's why Damian Pierce against the Browns.
Well, you just said the magic name.
That's
I thought of him instantly when I read the rule. I thought, whoa, Damian Pierce, we wanted to see it anyway in 2024, because he's a really good kick returner. And Steven Sims as well, you have him back. That'd be interesting. But he had the punt return against the Ravens in the playoffs for a touchdown. Pierce had the 75-yard touchdown run off a kickoff return. And now he'll get the ball on his hands, and he just has to crack through that wave.
Yep.
there's a lot to it, and I know we have a lot of radio to talk about this regarding how you get the guys on the edges, because you could see where the ball's going, right? Now I've got to double back and be a last line of defense, or am I going to run to the ball? If you run to the ball, you might be dead, right?
Yeah, right.
You want to create this leverage situation where you prevent a wide return, and at the same time, you're a second line of defense. I don't know how they're going to organize all that. It's going to be really interesting to talk to Frank Ross.
Yeah, that's the person that I think I'm very interested in talking to. The other person I'm really interested in talking to, kind of to my point, I want to know what this means for Nick Caserio and how
personnel.
He and how they think about the personnel.
Well, Jim Miller said last night he thought more big guys would be on the line, if you will.
I could see that happening for sure.
But do you put big guys across from them, or do you put speed so they can get to the gaps quickly?
Absolutely. That's exactly my point. Like, how do you... Do you keep another offensive lineman? Do you, you know, a guy like say Patrick Ricard for the Baltimore Ravens? He would be perfect for this because he's 300 pounds, so he looks kind of like a guard, but he's a fullback.
Mm-hmm.
He would be perfect because he's lead blocking for the returner at that point. The other thing too for me, and it just so happened, I said this on Texags this morning when I was on with them. It just so happened that my schedule, as I was going through this, that one of the players that I had to write his... I take all the notes and kind of accumulate them and make them a full report. But the player that I had was Anaya Smith from Texas A&M. And I had just been at Pro Day last week and watched him. He did all the running back stuff. And he did all the wide receiver stuff. I was standing up at the oh, man, A&M facility, by the way. Oh, my God.
Really?
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Not surprised.
So I'm standing next to his family. His family. Every time that the running backs would, like, get in a drill, you'd hear somebody. I was thinking his dad, maybe his trainer, was like, yep, go, do it, like, from above. So he did every single rep. He was doing everything. The one thing that I realized I haven't been writing up in reports have been how good these guys are as returners. I just haven't been doing it. And it just so happened that this rule is put in place either Monday or Tuesday, and it just so happens to be the day that I'm writing up Anaya Smith. I'm thinking, holy cow, these new rules, man, that makes Anaya Smith maybe a bit more valuable because that play, and I don't know how many you're going to have in a game, you know, kickoffs, field, say you score a total of between field goals and extra, or field goals and touchdowns, you have maybe 6-7 returns in a game.
Yep.
So,
and you're going to, Johnny, you're going to have at least 5 of those returned probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. I don't think you're going to have much of a touchback
unless it's Katie bar the door and returns. They're getting field position galore. Then you go for the touchback, but the touchback is punitive because it's the 30 and not the 25.
Oh,
they wanted to put it at the 35, but
that would have been too much.
They couldn't get it through.
That would have been too much.
They couldn't get it through, so they said. And Rich McKay said they estimate 60%+ of the kickoffs are going to be returned.
Yes.
In the Super Bowl, there
and
were
that
no
puts
returns.
That puts these returner, these guys that have returned skills, back in the game.
Yeah.
It really puts them back in the game. I mean, last year with the whole, you know, you can fair catch when you, you know, kick off. Totally gone.
I love that part.
That is awesome. I was so happy to see that gone. That I just remember the air going out of the building when the Colts did that. Like in the first game against the Ravens, it didn't happen. The second game is the first kickoff. We're all jacked up at home, and all of a sudden the Colts return at the last second, puts his arm up, catches it, and is like, ball to 25?
And you get it to 25. That was ridiculous.
Oh, and colleges still do that. Here's my question. You cannot onside kick anymore, right?
You can. You have to declare it. It's in the fourth quarter. You're allowed a max of 2. I know. There's no surprise onside kick.
No
Johnny,
surprise onside.
How often do you see the surprise onside kick? How often?
Not very much anymore.
Never.
Not
like
very
virtually
much
never, right?
Forever.
So
never.
When you desperately need it, you're down a couple of scores. They still have the onside kick in the bag the old way, and you'll do it the old way.
Right.
Where they were down to, what, 4 or 5% success rate on this. And Rich McKay also said it was 13. They'd love to get it to 13, but they can't do it the way the rules are currently written.
Right.
He is a big proponent, by the way. The head of the competition committee wants the 4th and 20 play.
Yes.
He wants that option.
Let's go.
I don't know.
Let's
about that, man.
Go.
So
yes.
He was asked, why couldn't you get that through as well? He said, he basically said the equivalent of, like, you got to pick your spots. One
right.
step at a time here.
Right.
There's no way we were going to get all that through. So let's just get this through. I'm saying this. This is really good for the game to do something. It's a dead play. We all know it. It's a big buzzkill. Everybody jacked up, opening kickoff, and then nothing happens. You're
right.
kicking it out of the back of the end zone, or God forbid it's a fair catch at the 5-yard line and they get it at the 25. Come on.
Yeah.
That stinks. That's not even football anymore.
No.
Either get rid of it or try something like this. I'm still saying that getting rid of it is on the table somewhere. If they hate this, if this is too much of a calamity, either way, I could see them eventually getting rid of the kickoff. But they're going to try this for 1 year, see how it goes.
Now, they had a number of special teams coaches that they engaged with to look at the validity of this.
Yeah, and they put two of them up there. Fossil, yeah. one of them. I was in the yeah. press conference room yesterday.
Right, and so they talked about it. And they
by
talked
the way,
through
two,
all.
It's like having two Frank Rosses up there. You get you
They're
know
all special teams coaches are all the same.
You
man.
Know what they said though? I thought of you because at the combine they all met all
yeah.
the special teams
right.
coaches and they talked about the rule. And I was cracking up. That's an SNL sports skit
yeah.
of a special teams convention, special teams coach convention. Like, oh my gosh,
there's
you know,
not enough
all
coffee
up.
In the world,
yes,
man.
They're all caffeinated, yelling at each other, all fired up, firing each other up. Come on, you can do it. We can do this rule.
Man, I'm telling you, after a big win, Frank Ross will break your hand.
Oh,
like he's on a level of intensity.
Yes.
And it's awesome. I mean, the Texas special teams have been incredible since he has been here. I can only imagine when it was decided upon, but when it was being discussed that he was sitting down with his whiteboard or pen and paper and going, okay, what can we do? How could we do this? What's
yeah.
what's the best way to go about this? And then, you know, hey, is this kind of an offensive play? You know, do we need to run like power? Do we need to run zone scheme? Like, how do we do this? I've watched a number of the XFL teams and what they were doing and kind of how they were there would be different things. Like there was one team I saw that actually like split their blocking. Like they're blocking one side one way and then blocking the other side the other way. And so the running back would then determine kind of where he wanted to go.
Yeah.
And I thought, interesting. Okay, that's one way of looking at it. So I love the fact that the return will be a part of the game again.
Big time.
That there will be spots on a roster for guys like Steven Sims, you know, who has that big punt return against the Ravens in the playoff game. These returns become that much more valuable. You're going to have, you know, a decent number of them throughout the season. How many of those can you turn into a big play? Now, I know people are saying, well, last year you had Andrew Beck fumble it, pick it up and go, and Damian Pierce, et cetera.
We were
yeah,
lucky.
The Texans were really, really
we
good.
We had three returns for touchdowns when you consider regular season and playoffs.
Right. That, two kickoff, one punt. Yep.
Yes. That's strong.
That's
and
very
we were
good.
Great in coverage.
Yep.
With this new rule, the way it's written, you are going to have some crazy stuff happen.
Right.
You're going to have a lead in the game, and somebody's going to make a big play. Might not be for a touchdown,
mm-hmm.
but they'll get the ball at your 40 because of a return. Somebody sprung a leak.
Yeah.
Whatever happened. I don't even know what it's going to look like. You've been watching XFL footage. I'll keep going to people who complain about the game needs to be safer, yet complain about these rule changes.
Right.
You can't have it both ways.
Right.
They're trying to make the game safer. Either get rid of the kickoff, but if you want a kickoff, it's ridiculous to have this ceremonial kickoff because that's mm-hmm. what we have right now.
Correct.
It's a ceremonial play.
Yep.
All right? If you're okay with that, then make that your take instead of – now, Andre would say – I can't speak for Andre, but I'm betting he would say – if you go back to the old way, it's more exciting. He's absolutely right with the old kickoff return rules.
Right.
Touchback at the 20, you know, right. things like that. But what we have here is evolution of the game for safety purposes,
yes.
and then it got too far, so now they're trying to make it more of a playmaking kind of play. But it's completely different. It's radical. But even with the extra point to the 33-yard line, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was needed as well because the extra point was becoming a ceremonial play.
Correct.
It's like 98, 99% effective. So
right.
what's the point at that
right.
at that point? Now you have the 33-yard extra point. Yeah, you do miss some of these.
There's
it's
some
a competitive
excitement
play.
In it.
They're
Not
trying to make all the plays in the game more competitive so you don't go to the refrigerator for the extra point or so the kickoff becomes must-see TV as they themselves worded it.
Yeah, then, you know, obviously the safety being the biggest factor and I can remember way back in the day. running down on kickoff is about the most exhilarating thing you can do. And it's the scariest thing ever. Right. Because the collisions that occur.
Well, you know what happens, though? The fans who are watching on TV don't see the collision.
That's true. That's a good point.
The camera follows the ball. Think about a kickoff. The camera's following the ball, and it goes to the return guy. Either goes out of the back of the end zone, or he has it. Now you see the blocking as he's running up. But you missed, as a TV viewer.
That's a good point.
I know you see all this stuff because you're in the building. You're on the sideline. Right. You're watching this. Andre's watching this. You guys see it. You guys watch the whole field.
Right.
Most viewers only see that shot, and they miss that, bam, that initial contact. They wanted to get away from the running start, obviously, and they've done that the way they've organized this rule. So I think it's pretty cool to set it up this way.
Yeah, very, very cool. So a lot of stuff coming out of the NFL annual meeting. Kickoffs, obviously, were the biggest point of discussion, I guess is the best way of putting it. Now, the Texans sitting at number 42 and 59. Now, will they stay there? Probably not. But if they do, is there a possibility that they go big and big? We'll talk with Drew Doherty next right here on Texans All Access. What's happening, everybody? Welcome back to Wednesday edition of Texans All Access. John Harris here with you. It's time for In the Lab with my man, Drew Doherty. We dove into a lot of different things, including, is there a possibility to go big, big in this draft? Take a listen. You'll see what I'm talking about.
In the lab time right now, Drew, John, good to be with you. We appreciate you listening, watching, whatever you're doing. And John, how are you, first of all?
Doing okay. Good. Hanging in there. And I'm knee deep. I think last night I was watching a safety from Ohio State at like midnight trying to get, because I had made a point. I was doing a certain number of players. He was the last player that day, and it just took me out into midnight. So I don't know if what I wrote made
just
sense.
Ohio State players, or what were you doing?
It just happened to be that player. I don't know why. I was Josh Proctor from Ohio State. Good athlete, and excellent, build and all that kind of stuff. But might be a guy the Texans could look at on day three. Add to the special teams and bolster the safety depth chart, if you will. But free agency's done plenty of that, bolstering depth charts. So we'll see kind of how all that goes. But man, a lot of news happening with the Texans. It's crazy, Drew.
Yeah, let's start there. You brought up special teams. Special teams is getting impacted externally in a huge way because of the new kickoff rule. And basically, it's the new XFL, or it's the XFL kickoff rule, which if you haven't seen it, there's basically two lines facing each other. And they're really, really close on the kickoff, the receiving team's end of the field. And you don't have to boom it as far and as hard. You can if you want. But if you kick it out of bounds, you give them a touchback at the 30. But what this does is it probably eliminates any more Andrew Beck kickoff returns for a score, which I just tweeted. So we're not going to see Andrew Beck getting loose like he did. But I think it's probably going to make things a little bit more exciting on kickoff returns, because it's almost like more like an offensive play, really, because you can kind of scheme some blocking schemes up that are a little different and so on and so forth. And you can speak even better to this, but I'm cool with this. I'm a little sad I won't see the old kickoff, but this will be kind of interesting, don't you think?
Oh yeah. Interesting is definitely the word. And I'm not totally sure
interesting way too much in this forum.
Yeah, maybe, but it's a good word for this. This one's kind of like a, that dog head term when he or she sees something like, what? It's kind of like that, like, okay, let's see. And the reason it's interesting to me is how teams are going to attack this. Are they going to because the players are so close, the defenders and the blockers are so close. I've seen some XFL teams that run like some sort of offense, almost like an offensive scheme, the way that they're trying to block that. And I would imagine that when Frank Ross first heard of this possibly happening, he sat down and started doodling and watching XFL film. What did good teams with returners do? And you're right. It does eliminate an Andrew Beck sort of return. So we'll always have Andrew Beck in Jacksonville, the play that I think turned the season around in 2023. But what it also does is it brings back the return into the game, because in all honesty, in college football, there are very few returns now because of the fair catch rule.
Mm-hmm.
And coaches are just like, no, we want the
ball. I don't like that one. I don't like that fair catch.
I mean, you know, we had that last year in the NFL, and I'll never forget, like second game of the year, the Colts have a, you know, they waved a fair catch, and I just remember my heart dropping, like, what? Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. And I thought it was a great kick by Kaimi. It just fair catch. So I hated that rule too, but you don't have as many returns in college. And so, and I think teams in some sense have gotten away from putting a really good returner back there. Well, I'm curious to see now how NFL teams will do it. Who will they put back there? What does this bring back in that particular position? Because that used to be a value. Like, I would put in a draft report, hey, this guy's got kick and punt return ability. Drew, I don't know that I put that in many scouting reports that I've done thus far, and I've done almost probably 210, 215 reports. I don't know that I put in there, oh yeah, punt and kick return skills like that. I mean, and I don't even know if a guy has to have kick and punt return skills. You know, it might just be a number three running back you want back there, a guy that can at least just catch the ball and then run like a running back. And that's, you know, kind of the Damian Pierce theory. Like last year, Damian catch the ball. Now he obviously gets some buildup speed, but you know, he's very difficult to tackle. So maybe that becomes the role of the third running back. Maybe that becomes the role of the fourth or fifth wide receiver. You know, a guy that's got good return skills. You know, does this increase the value of a guy like Devin Duvernay, who just went down to Jacksonville? I don't know. I'm really curious. Keyshawn Nixon's one of the better return guys with the Packers. And so what does that bring for him? And what does that open up for him? Maybe it doesn't open things up. Maybe he needs a little bit more runway to be able to make a move. I don't know. So I'm curious how they're going to defend it. I'm curious as to what they come up from a creative standpoint. So I guess the next one now is what happens with the onside kick. Are they going to give teams, I know one of the teams, I can't remember which one it was, proposed the 4th and 20 from the 20, your own 20. I think that's what it is. And I was like, I love that rule. I love it. I've been there on onside kicks, man. That's one of the scariest things I've ever been a part of in sports, ever. And I've faced 95 mile an hour fastball, man.
You're saying when you're on the field as a player, yeah.
Oh, I hated the onside kick. I hated it as a coach. I hated it as a player. Hated it. So I like the opportunity to go get the ball again on onside kick, but you put in that 4th and 20 rule because I don't know how you onside kick with this thing now. I don't know how that goes. So there'll be some things that have to get kind of worked out, but you know, the first game of the year will end up featuring the Texans. So we'll find out right away.
Wait, what? Yeah, if you didn't hear, the Pro Football Hall of Fame game, the Texans are going to be in it against the Bears. It makes so much sense because Andre Johnson going into the Hall of Fame, he was a Texan. You got Devin Hester, former Bear, going in, as well as Mongo, Steve McMichael. That guy, if you're watching or listening to this and you don't know really much about him, just go to YouTube and look up Steve McMichael, character with a capital C. He was a part of that phenomenal 85 Bears defense, but really almost all of the 80s into the early 90s, he was a force there on the inside. Then he went into the WWE. He was a wrestler. Yep. He's always got like the good personality and good perspective on things. When you see the interviews, sadly, he's fighting Lou Gehrig's disease, but he goes in, as well as Julius Peppers played with the Bears for a few years. So with three former Bears, a Texan, and the Texans haven't been in it since 2002, first year of the franchise. So they were kind of due, and that's going to be fun. That means they have four preseason games as opposed to just three. Don't know how much we'll see of the starters. Probably not much because it's so very early in August. But nonetheless, first bit of football, we'll include the Texans. And that's not a bad thing. It's on Thursday night football. I can't wait. You can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun, John. It's going to be a great weekend because you got the game on Thursday and then Dre going into the hall on Saturday night or Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty awesome situation. And, you know, looking forward, I've never been to the Hall of Fame. And,
me either.
You know, it got to a point where I was like, you know what, I'm just going to come up here with, you know, when a Texan gets in the Hall of Fame. And so when Andre got in the Hall of Fame, I was like, please put us in the game so we can get a trip up there to Canton. I would, you know, I'm looking forward to that so much. To see Andre going in, you know, the game itself will, you know, are always fun. And, you know, for us doing a game, it gives us a chance to kind of work the kinks out. It does move everything up. You know, it's going to probably start training camp a week earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So that will change things a little bit, kind of changes things, you know, for us having to do, you know, Monday radio, or not Monday radio, but morning radio for training camp. But Look, I think a lot of people are really excited about this 2024 team. And I think last year, the Ravens, were in it. I want to say the Ravens were in it. And, you know, they played all the way to the AFC Championship game. So this is just going to be, I think, a situation in which a lot of, you know, twos and threes are going to get a look. A lot of rookies are going to get some looks. And, you know, you're going to face the Bears during the season. So you're not going to give them anything. It's just an opportunity to, you know, get some younger guys the opportunity to scrimmage against, you know, a Bears team. And I would hope that Matt Eberflus and DeMeco will sit down and say, hey, we're not playing our ones. You know, here's what we're doing. And so you don't get a situation where, you know, the Texans are playing their twos and threes and the Bears are like, nah, we're all in ones. Here we go. Yeah, so either way, hopefully they'll get that worked out. But either way, I don't mind it. I called for it. I wanted it because I wanted to see Drake go into the Hall of Fame. And hopefully a few years after that, we'll all find a way to get to J.J. Watt's Hall of Fame and enshrine it as well. So just really looking forward to that entire weekend and everything that goes to the Hall of Fame and just soaking all that in.
Can't wait. It's going to be cool. Like you said, I've never been to that one. I've been to the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, and that's
– I have too.
Tremendous.
I have too.
Now, granted, it was in 1990, and I was 13 years old, so
it's a cool place.
Awesome town, USA. Yeah. All right, let's kick into this. You and I text back and forth a lot, and last night we were going back and forth about this. I was running mock draft simulation, and now that the Texans have moved back, and even before they moved back, the situation comes up quite a bit where at 42 – a guy like T'Vondre Sweat is available. The massive defensive tackle, nose tackle from Texas is there. You're a big fan of him. I've seen his stuff. Boy, oh boy, he's exciting. You wonder, you know, what's he going to look like in the pros? But, wow, that's an intriguing fit on this defense. So there are times when he's there, and then you do the next pick, and usually you go some other direction, like there's a good wide receiver or a good safety available, and that's something that I typically do. But then you get down to 86 and there's still like Jenkins is available from Michigan or Hall from Ohio State or somebody else or Fisky. I mean, they're not that Fisky's going to be there, but there's another really, really, really good defensive tackle who's rated very, very highly that slipped. And it's like, well, what's to keep you from getting a guy who's got a different skill set, is not that massive dude like Sweat, and taking him? Or vice versa, Sweat's gone early, and so you go with one of those highly rated D tackles that I just mentioned. Ruka Rororo, he's another option. And then you do another pick. And then McKinley Jackson from Texas A&M, and a big, big dude is available late. Why not go that route? Do you see that being a possibility, going a big and a small at the defensive tackle spot in one of those first four picks?
I sure do. And, you know, I know that, you know, bringing in Foley Fatsikasi, you know, he's 320 pounds, you know, that's going to help. And, you know, Foley's pretty quick, you know, for a guy that size, just kind of watching him in the games against us, you know, he can move pretty well. So, you know, that's, you've gotten a little bit bigger, but I don't know that you've gotten big enough. And I think Foley's on a one-year contract, so you just don't have big youth. So, or young bigs, depending on how you want to put it. So, to me, I don't have any issue with going big. What I don't want, or I don't foresee, and this is one of the issues that you've got to, and you will encounter with this particular draft class. There are really only a couple of just true bigs, and that's McKinley Jackson, T'Vondre Sweat, and there might be a few, you know, down the road. But as far
who,
as just
who are the names bigs, down the road? Who are the name the bigs down the
well,
road?
Well, man, like, you know, I say that, and I don't know. Well, let me take a look at. I say that, but as I think about it, you know, just man, there really aren't that many. You know, Zion Logue from out of Georgia, is 315 pounds, but. You know, Justin Rogers from out of Auburn is 330. I want to say I saw him at the Senior Bowl, and I thought there were some good things from him, but you just don't have a ton beyond that as well. Fabian Lovett, Jordan Jefferson. There's been a lot of Jeffersons at LSU. I thought Jordan Jefferson from LSU was really, really good in the Senior Bowl, topping out at 315 pounds. So, you know, the thing is, when you start looking at kind of the other, you know, players, you know, 297, 302, 284, 296, 306, 291, 290, 303,
Greyhounds 299. Compared to Jackson and Sweat.
Well, it's, it you know, like we talked about a few times, things have changed.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not a position that colleges are putting big guys at anymore because they're taking those guys and like, look, we can't play defense against this, you know, blazing fast offensive unit. We've got to be able to fly up front. Now we got to be able to hold our own. So you can't just go 250 across the board. You know, you do have to have some size, but if you're putting a guy with some size on the field, you know, it's got to be, you know, 280, 290, and a guy that can move a little bit. You know, a rarity now is becoming a McKinley Jackson, the Tavondre Sweat. Those guys are moving over to the offensive side of the ball. So hopefully that'll change in the future. You know, I think about, you know, next year's group, Nazir Stackhouse from Georgia's, you know, 320. You know, he's a guy inside, but there's no Tavondre Sweat, not that I can think of off the top of my head. But you're just getting sleeker. Now, you still have guys that are strong and explosive and twitchy and those kind of guys. You know, a guy like Braden Fiske. I mean, his numbers athletically are off the charts. And he's 292. But there comes a point where because the offenses now have 320, 325. You think about our offensive line. Our offensive line, you know, it can average 315 up to 317, you know, depending on who's on the field at any one time. But, you know, our guards can be pretty big. Well, if you're giving up 25, 30 pounds to them consistently, you know, that's going to be tough. Now, they're quicker. You know, you can't see what you can't hit what you can't see sort of thing. So if they move well, that's going to be tough. But you can only do so much of that. But that's what the colleges are providing now. So there are a few bigs a little bit later. But I think in looking at that, if that is, I don't want to say a concern, but if that is something that you want to look at, you want to add to your defense, you want to get some size, you may have to overdraft one of those guys because there might be a few other teams thinking the same thing. So we'll see how that ends up going. But I would think just my gut tells me that one of Tavondre Sweat or McKinley Jackson will end up with the Texans. Just my gut. But I also feel like you're right in the fact that could they go big? Yeah, I think they could. Because I do think
let me clarify. I'm saying massive and big. Like only big, one of big. Sweat and Jackson, not both Sweat and Jackson.
Like capital big.
Yeah.
Like big. Caps that big. Sort of thing. Yeah. Yeah, because to me there's a little bit more of those type players. As I just ripped off, you know, Chris Jenkins, 299, Fiske, 292, Leonard Taylor, Miami, 303, Mike Hall, Ohio State, 290, Gabe Hall, Baylor, who I like, 291, Keith Randolph, 296, Mekhi Wingo, 284, I don't even know what position he plays, Dwayne Carter, 302, Justin Boygby, 297, who I like, Tyler Davis, Clemson, 301, Jaden Crumbity, Mississippi State, 301. I mean, you know, in today's game, 301 is not massive. But it's going to get to a point where that's what we have in today's game, that the 320s, 330s end up going over to the offensive side of the ball. The 320s and the 330s that you end up having staying on the defensive side of the ball end up being freakazoids. And, you know, it's going to make them probably, you know, there'll be a higher depending, but I would imagine there's going to be a higher demand for, you know, some of those. And that's why I feel like Tavondre Sweat, McKinley Jackson, because they're kind of the two of the bigs. They're probably going to get, I don't know, overdrafted, but maybe drafted a little bit higher than some of these mock draft simulators think.
All right. It's always fun talking with you. We get into much more, but in between now and then, enjoy your Easter, John.
Hope yes.
Hippity hops and brings you some nice jelly beans and Reese's peanut butter cup eggs. Sound good?
Yep. Easter's going to be a big day.
Big day. All right.
Remember Breaking Bad, one of the best scenes of Breaking Bad last season?
I never saw
it. Breaking Bad.
Yeah. I've seen a few seasons, but I haven't seen the one.
If you know, Walter White likes his breakfast with a number on it. And so that last season is going to be a number I hit on Sunday. So we'll see.
Okie doke. All right, John. Always good to be with you. Thank you, man. Thank you for listening to In the Lab.
Yeah, I don't think Drew got exactly what I was trying to say, but that's okay. It'll just be a little mystery, I suppose, at that point. Okay. One of the things that we didn't talk about earlier in the show with Mark was my thoughts on the hip drop tackle. I'll give you some of those and what's going on around the NFL. next, right here on Texans All Access. We got one final segment of Wednesday edition of Texans All Access. Appreciate you being here with me, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter for your Houston Texans. One of the things Mark and I didn't talk about, and I feel like this one is going to be, I heard Tom Pelissero's comments on it, and I couldn't probably have said it better than Pelissero did. I think this is going to be something that early on people will react to in the preseason or react to, and then we get into season. I think this will take a little bit for everybody to get used to this hip drop tackle. And if you don't know exactly what the hip drop tackle is, basically what it is a defender leaving his feet kind of swung around, trying to hang on to a tackle, and then throwing all of his weight down on the back of the legs of a runner or a ball carrier. And that's, it's funny because, you know, that's not something that ever really used to be part of the game. Now, Pelissero said that the NFL is concerned that there were some teams and coaches that were coaching that. I've never seen it coached that way. I don't remember too many Texans tackling that way, but I mean, look, you got to get a ball carrier down however you possibly can. So I feel like it's going to be over-officiated early. They'll be told to kind of back off a little bit. My worry is that because it becomes over-officiated and they're missing other things, but you just put more on the official's plate and that gets really, really dicey. So I'm not opposed to it. I don't want to see guys get hurt carrying a football. I don't want that. But I feel like that was starting to become something more than it should have been. So I agree with Pelissero. I do think there will be kind of some over-officiating of in the preseason just to kind of give guys the heads up and then let them adjust. It's kind of like leading with your head a little bit. That took a while for it to adjust. The players adjusted. They got it done. Speaking of players, let's go around the NFL real fast. Devion Clowney is doing something he hasn't done since his rookie years, first few years in the NFL with the Texans. He signed more than 1-year deal. He signed a 2-year deal to go to the Carolina Panthers. Won't see JD this year unless we make it all the way to the Super Bowl, which would be kind of interesting to face the Panthers in the Super Bowl. Pro day today at LSU. Jaden Daniels threw, looked good, but the story was Malik Nabers. Ran into the high 4.3, low 4.4 range. He had a 42-inch vertical leap. I mean, he did everything you kind of expected Malik Nabers to do. And a lot of people are kind of pushing their chest out like, yeah, he's number one, man. He's not number one. I haven't really changed, to be honest, with the receivers. I thought all three of them were dynamic this year, Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze, and Malik Nabers. And, look, I know LSU fans are going to fight for one. Ohio State fans are going to fight for another. Washington fans are going to fight for another. I think all three of them are going to be really, really good pros. One over the other? I don't know. I mean, Malik Nabers said, yeah, he wanted to win the competition, basically. But I think what you want to do is win in the right spot. The right spot is the biggest thing that matters. So Marvin Harrison Jr. said he's not testing. So we'll never know. But Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze both tested very, very well. And they will be catching passes in an NFL stadium near you. Just unfortunately not in Houston. All right, that's going to do it. A big thanks to Drew, to Mark, to all of you for listening. Thank you so much. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. And as always, go Texans.